Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Malaysia's COVID-19 SOPs are still largely based on surface disinfection, and experts say that there simply hasn't been enough focus on monitoring indoor air quality, as well as a lack of investment in improving ventilation of shared enclosed spaces. Now, have there been clear SOPs and resources made available to help ensure good ventilation, especially in spaces that are continuously occupied or where masks are removed when eating, for instance? Joining us on the show tonight is Associate Professor Dr. Mohamad Sharul Mohamad Nazir. He's a senior lecturer at the Department of Earth Science and Environment at University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Sharul, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join us tonight. I'd like to begin our conversation taking a look at this study that you led, the findings of which were published earlier this year in the international scientific journal Nature. And the study was about the airborne transmissibility of SARS-CoV-2. Now, I'm just wondering, what did you learn from that study, Sharul, that perhaps we need to take note of, especially when we're thinking about reducing airborne transmission indoors, particularly in settings like the office or offices or restaurants?
Right. Hi, Melissa. Hi, Siraj. Thank you so much, Awani, for inviting me on behalf of UKM. Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you so much for the question. Okay. Last year, since April to June 2020, UKM, Utah, and UM have conducted quite impressive study focusing on indoor hospital ward in hospital, teaching hospital in Kuala Lumpur. Basically, we came from various backgrounds. Like myself, I'm personally indoor air quality background. We have virologists. We have DOSH, OSH background and medical background. So with this combination, we conducted airborne transmission study in the hospital ward, which involved COVID patients. As you remember last year, where there are many various type of clusters that have been occupied in the Klang Valley Hospital, especially in our hospital that we conducted the research, we found that quite shocking back in last year compared this year, since WHO has stated the airborne transmission actually involves water droplets that can be transmitted 1 meter apart. For your information, indoor environment, there are two transmission, including human to surface to human and human to human. And basically, from our research that we found, ultra-fine particles such as PM2.5 be a potential carrier of the SARS-CoV-2 virus in the ambient air. When we found that the ultra-fine particles such as PM2.5, so PM2.5 can penetrate deep into our lungs compared to PM10. So that's why recently, back in a few months ago, where WHO stated that it can be traveled far, far more than 2 meters away. I think this is that we found last year, where these ultra-fine particles can be a potential carrier of the SARS-CoV-2. For example, if the occupants, patient in the hospital coughing or singing or talking, so the virus can be spread out from the mouth and can be accumulated with this aerosol or ultra-fine particles. So that's why if you realize back in recently, there are many more clusters that involve with indoor environments such as offices, and indoor spaces. So I think this is why the spreading can be more. Yeah.
Okay, Sharul, it's a fascinating study, but I wonder if there's something special about the hospital, specific to hospitals, meaning that the viral load, I mean, just because people with the disease and perhaps severe disease and therefore coughing and expelling the virus will be much more than you have in other settings. or potentially in other settings. Does the hospital setting mean that this study can't really be applied to other settings?
So it does can be fit to various indoor environment types because we found, for example, if the aerosol can be travel further, so that means in indoor or like office setting, it also can be the same thing because you know people talking and people do these activities, and then there's a dust in our ambient air, especially the PM2.5. So I think this actually our study that can be implemented to this various of type of indoor. So that's why we must emphasize the basics of SOPs such as mask, wearing mask, and social distance. That is the basic things that people need to be followed, because from our study, it proved that it can travel far. So it can be traveled far in the ventilation system. So I think there are many factors that can trigger this spreading of the virus in the indoor space. Siraj.
Okay. All right. So now that we know that airborne transmissibility is the dominant way SARS-CoV-2 spreads, I believe in March, when WHO released their roadmap for better ventilation, but it was only in July that our government, that the Ministry of Human Resources, released a guidance note on ventilation and indoor air quality for non-residential settings. I'm wondering, Cheryl, if you think that guidance note that was released, whether that goes far enough, whether it's comprehensive enough to provide guidance for businesses and offices and restaurants to continue to open up to live with COVID during this pandemic.
Basically yes, it does. Even though like international, like US, UK, Europe, so they have implemented a guideline, quite previously than us. For me, DOSH, Ministry of Health, and other related agencies, I think have done a great job because the guideline is very important for the employers, the employees, and everyone to use, especially for those that who want to continue their business, to open their office. So I think this guideline need to be read out. But the most important is how can we understand the guideline. It may sometimes it be technical to other people. So I think from my understanding, and I also part, me and my team also part of the guideline preparation with the Academy Science Malaysia and many agencies. So I think the wordies is understandable. I think it should be very helpful for the future, especially when we talk about gym, for example. I think it's very important for this kind of setting need to focus or emphasize the guideline by the DOSH.
Right. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. That was Mohd Sharul Mohd Nazir of UKM. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll come back to this topic in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned to consider this. Watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. If you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing the need for a greater focus on ventilation and indoor air quality as we return to work, to school, and to play. Joining us on the show tonight is Lillian Tay. She's the design director at Veritas Architects. She's also the immediate past president of the Malaysian Institute of Architects, which is the professional body for architects in the country. Lillian, good evening. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'd like to make reference to the Department of Occupational Health and Safety's guidance notes on ventilation and indoor air quality for non-residential settings. I'm just wondering, if you were to take a look at that guidance note and in terms of the practical issues when it comes to improving indoor air quality, what challenges do you see or have you observed when it comes to ensuring proper or better ventilation for Malaysia's existing buildings?
I think the first note, the guidance note from DOS, quite nicely, I think we about now to embark on the whole phase two, phase three, because people are starting to get back to work in the office. And the notes, they are guidance notes, they are guidelines, and I do find them fairly comprehensive. There's a lot of suggestions. It leaves people free to assess what they can adopt, what is practical in their specific business, the specific premises. So in that way, I feel it is a good and workable document that will be a good reference.
Lillian, are there gaps in in the guidelines in terms of how buildings operate? Because I know as an architect, you're not just thinking of the those rooms and those situations that people might be quite static, sitting at a desk and so on. But there are also issues of corridors, of lifts, which are very confined spaces and take a huge number of people, over the period of an office day and so on and so forth. Do the guidelines cover all these areas?
Well, I think it does mention, besides the mechanical means, of upgrading the filtration systems and improving the air change, and to increase the amount of fresh air content in enclosed workspace areas. It does mention that that you do need to also have multiple strategies. You also need to teach and train.
Lillian, I think the audio is breaking up a little bit. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break and come back and see whether we can get you on the line and perhaps maybe improve a little bit on the audio. We'll be right back on Consider This. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. We are back on Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, with me Sherrod Kutin, and we've got Lillian Tay back on the line. She's the design director at Veritas Architects. Lillian, coming back to something you said just before the break about how we need to be looking to incentivize the adoption of the guidance note issued by DOSH. I'm just wondering about compliance. So this is just a guidance note. It's not quite an SOP where everyone has to adopt and there are measure or there are fines or repercussions if you don't follow. What do you think can be done to make sure that existing buildings are COVID-19 compliant, making sure that ventilation is improved?
Well, I think the guidelines does set out all the various solutions and recommendations, and I think it is good that it's not too prescriptive, in the sense that many businesses, premises, they have their specific requirements, their specific modus operandi, and it's good that they have the flexibility to follow the principles of what's set out in the guidelines and implement it according to their premises. So I think it's important. I think companies, they appoint, like for instance, like a leader who will be the cheerleader for ensuring SOPs are met as we go through the whole recovery process before we hopefully go back to normal one day.
So speaking of going back to normal, do you think our love affair with air conditioning has to end?
I think the love affair has to, I mean, I think it's good to start looking back at the wisdom of, old buildings that we had in the 50s and 60s before the days of air conditioning. I think designers, too, and architects, too, have to rethink whether we should really be always assuming that the best place is a totally hermetic, closed, controlled space. For the office space, of course, it's a little bit more difficult, but I think there's still a necessity to allow the space to breathe more. For instance, I think there is. It would be quite good to have balconies that can be open, not all the time, but periodically through the office day, through at lunchtime, for instance, that can allow fresh air to ventilate. Because if we were to really adopt these ideal fresh air content of air conditioning, I think it will be impose quite a big cost, really, to right. replace the whole system to be able to achieve that. You know, it's I think the WHO recommended fresh air quality is about four times what is the normal design quality. So I can't imagine that that would be a solution in the immediate future. Right. I think that probably there's wisdom to just go back and maintain and clean out the system so that it works more efficiently. I think we tend to have a very poor maintenance culture, and systems will deteriorate over time, and so therefore the performance is low. So I think the simple thing of just going back, cleaning it, maintaining it, and getting it back to close to its design, performance level would already be a big step. And then after that is to maintain a constant maintenance regime, so that it doesn't drop, the performance doesn't drop, and then introduce ways to bring in fresh air, in a practical manner, if I may say, right. even in the workplace.
Right. Just Lillian, can I ask you, I mean, Malaysia doesn't just have a love affair with air conditioning, but particularly in urban areas, we have a love affair with high-rise buildings. And I'm just wondering how practical open windows are, balconies are for buildings that are high-rise, particularly you see in the city centre, office spaces are predominantly in buildings that are very, very tall. Are you seeing perhaps more implementation of COVID ventilation guidelines in those types of buildings, and perhaps also in the newer design of new buildings? Are they taking into account all of that, the spread of COVID-19 happens?
Well, I'm a big believer in the big city, and I don't believe that this incident should let us stop believing that the city is a great center of creativity for business, and these making high-rise buildings more livable during times of contagious infections, I think is something that we can solve. I would really hate to see and I hope this wouldn't happen, that there will be a flight to the suburbs, which is also not a very green thing, as we clear more green areas in the hinterland. So I do believe that there are a lot of things we can do. As I mentioned earlier, I think even in the office environment, as you can see, many of our buildings did have like sky gardens that people can go out, that the doors can open to encourage more fresh air to come into the office space. And some of these can be easily made safe and even rainproof. We've done, for instance, sky gardens that have a permeable glass wall. So you can see out, the plants get sunlight and you get the sense of outdoors, but you're also protected from the rain. It can be used throughout the whole day, even in the monsoon season. And all these are quite doable by very simple design measures. So I don't think that... I think we need to open up our offices a bit more, because it's not, it's not all the time you have to be in an air-conditioned room. You could also come up to the terrace to have discussion, to go through and rework some papers, whatever you're doing. So this notion of thinking that office space is totally enclosed, I think that is what needs to change, and that we can still, even at 30, 40 storey, be able to work in a semi-outdoor situation. And that will be a nice relief in such times, should it recur, and I think it will recur in the future.
I completely agree. Thank you so much, Lillian, for being on the show tonight. Lillian Tay of Veritas Architects there. Joining us now, we have Associate Professor Dr. Bernard So. He's the Chair of the Center for Sustainable Mobility Technologies at the Faculty of Engineering and Science at University Tengku Abdul Rahman. Good evening, Bernard. I understand that you are one of the contributors to the Ministry of Health's guidelines of ventilation in healthcare settings, that is to reduce the transmission of respiratory pathogens. I'm just wondering what your takeaways were working on that and what we can use in non-residential settings, what we can adopt from that.
Okay, yeah, good evening, everyone. So we come out this guideline, we see that actually we need to put the COVID patient in the negative pressure ward. That is the most important thing. So we can see that when this COVID-19 pandemic outbreak, so Malaysia is slightly less prepared for that. So we have a very less this negative pressure ward. So after 1 year, we'll see that even for private hospital, they are setting up this negative pressure ward. Then we try to work on the ventilation side to reduce the transmission or the outbreak inside the hospital. Yeah. So they are provide certain guidelines on that. So like the ventilation rate, so there will be for negative pressure ward, there will be 12 ACH. Then for normal, there will be 6 ACH at least. For that. Then again, you are also telling them how to improve the ventilation in the hospital. So where's the airflow direction? We are talking about this ventilation, there are three important things. So one's the ventilation rate, another is the airflow direction, another is the airflow distribution. So airflow direction should be from clean to less clean. So means in other ways, means that the airflow should come, the air should flow from doctor to the patient, something like this. Then we also providing the mitigation strategy. So let's say you need to have this portable HEPA air cleaner that you can actually reduce or filter out the virus particle in the ward, where to put it and how to use it. So in that guideline, we recommend two mitigation strategy, which in line with the CDC guideline. So which is the portable HEPA air cleaner, another is a UVGI. Yeah.
Bernard, there have been a lot of, it seems like, you know, people are very entrepreneurial and companies are selling all kinds of cures and gadgets to deal with COVID-19. Not all of them necessarily very scientific. I mean, what would you advise the public, you know, because they see these advertisements on all kinds of online sites about, you know, cleaning the air and so on. What would you remind them of when trying to make decisions about these kinds of gadgets?
I see. Okay. So normally our advice, like,